Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business. And on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Every year, billions of pounds of perfectly good food go to waste in landfills. And today, we're exploring this profound issue of food waste with Jordan Schenk, Chief Customer Officer at Flash Food, as she offers her insights into how we can transform this narrative one meal at a time. At Flash Food, Jordan oversees a range of strategic initiatives aimed at driving positive change. Her leadership is a testament to her unwavering commitment to revolutionizing the landscape of food sustainability. From leading commercial strategies to shaping marketing and product initiative, Jordan's influence is evident and incredibly impactful. Before joining Flash Food, Jordan's journey was already making strides in her career. At Impossible Foods, she propelled the Impossible Burger into the mainstream, showcasing her talent for impactful innovation. Her co-founding role at Sunwink further solidified her reputation for crafting brands that resonate deeply with consumers, but also while prioritizing sustainability. Recognized by Forbes as one of the top 50 most innovative chief marketing officers, Jordan's influence transcends corporate boundaries. And today, we're really privileged to talk about this topic with her, and as she shares insights into Flash Food's mission to combat food waste and enhance accessibility. And in this episode, we dive into topics like building a marketplace and Flash Food's unique start as they started in Canada's largest grocery store, how they focus on what they call the Goldilocks moment, which is reducing food waste, saving customers money, and bringing in new customers and sales for retailers, how they disrupted that little sticker program you see at grocery stores, and how they focused on original styles of marketing to drive growth in new areas via partnerships and mail and focused areas. Jordan shares her journey insights and unwavering dedication to building a brighter, more sustainable future for us all. Please enjoy this conversation.
What I know is that there is not demand to pay the green tax, if you will, to come in for climate. There is a demand to pay for things that are cheaper than a commodity good, and that will always exist. And so what's amazing about how we framed it was not only the value of sort of alleviating complexity to these businesses, to being able to not just make money, but make their balance sheets much healthier. And on the shopper side, we were able to say, this is the only product that will beat a commodity good. And you save thousands of dollars a year. Outcome is, we're all making the world a better place, but really the real outcome is you're living a more fulfilled life or you have a much more fulfilled business.
Jordan, welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. We have lots to discuss. I'm super excited to discuss Flash Foods because food waste, as we know, is an absolute massive problem that we have. And one of those kind of problems where it just seems silly. It seems like, why does this problem exist? How do we grow all this beautiful food and how do we waste all this food at the same time? So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I wanted to just kind of start about your journey to thinking about the massive problem of food waste and how you kind of got involved. And was there any earlier parts of your career that kind of maybe shaped you to kind of lead you into this moment of being like, I have to be working on climate change and food waste? And like, what maybe brought you there?
I grew up effectively marketing anything from the big blue chip brands like Bud Light or I don't know, like Fancy Feast, Fiber One. I've kind of grown up in this sort of harmony of food and technology. It wasn't until about 8 or 9 years ago I found myself at Impossible Foods, came in as the head of marketing there and sort of built the almost like shot heard around the world moment that launched the plant-based movement, sort of the modern times. And, you know, in that incredible wild ride, as I started to really think about climate solutions within our food system, it just became, you know, really apparent to me in that moment, the amount of food that we produce. Like, I think I learned the statistic back then that we overproduce some odd of over 2,000 calories a day. So if you can imagine that we have such an abundance of food for the billions of people we have that they could be eating a full share of calories twice over, which is a pretty shocking statistic when you hear a ton of these conversations around, like, how are we going to get to the path to feed 10 billion people or beyond? And in reality, we built a system that already could not only feed, but overproduces what's available. And I think I continue to remain in sort of the consumer product goods space, founding my own company, I think in that you sort of get deeper and deeper into the world of waste and excess. And, you know, I thought as I looked at sort of the next things that I wanted to approach in my career, the next brands I wanted to build, movements I wanted to build, solving this issue of the amount of perfectly good food we produce and the increase of people who are hungry, like I just was like, I have to solve this messed up equation in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And obviously your experience and one at Impossible Foods for one is kind of at that moment of trying to educate the consumer on something that's completely new. But I guess with obviously with flash foods, it's not. It's just a change of kind of habit. And how did the early parts of flash food come to be in terms of, you know, building from kind of an idea to potentially building out the app and getting into the first few stores?
Yeah. So the company was founded a bit over 7 years ago by an awesome guy named Josh. You know, and at that moment, the company, what he had realized, he had a very similar sort of like awakening like I did. You know, his sister ran a catering business, saw just like the insane amounts of food that gets sort of thrown out after events and dug into it and was like, man, this is happening at a retail level. And so that early story was, I think, an interesting one because it was also at a time when the grocery industry was paying a lot more attention to sort of call it community and climate impact for the first time. And so the business actually had the fortune of growing out with Loblaw in Canada, which I'm sure you know as sort of the big one. And that story is very unique, I would say, in a sort of tech startup way, in that you don't often start with like the largest enterprise account kind of in the country. Oftentimes you find businesses start with sort of, you know, a test here and a test there. And so that I think is really interesting. I think what it also really shows is the insane amount of demand in the market that exists for solutions like this. Retailers don't like to throw away food. Retailers do their best to sell that through to its Best Buy. They do their best to maximize all of the donations that they provide to, you know, various food banks or partners. They do their best to provide the additional food to like now all of this technology that's like sort of repurposing it into animal feed. And there is still an insane amount of food that's going in the trash. And so that's sort of like the journey to then. We came into the States a little over 3 years ago after fully sort of saturating Canada. And we've sort of partnered with some of the larger retailers in scaling out. And we are right on the horizon of turning around and opening up to scale out through different independents and small businesses, which is super exciting.
And so we've had Olio on the show, which is a UK-based app that's focusing on food waste, but that's more on the consumer side. So, you know, you look in your fridge and they kind of came out of this need of I'm moving and I got to get rid of the food that's in my fridge before I move. We had Loop, which creates a lot of amazing juice products on the show as well. And they're trying to tackle that either at the farm level or at the wholesale level. So why was it so important for Flash Food to decide to go after this market that's still at the grocery level?
For us, from a business standpoint, you know, we see the solution best solved by that of a marketplace. You know, we exist as a tool that enables retailers to effectively list their food that they were looking to throw away. So they've already sort of taken that off the books. It's either on its way out to a landfill, sort of in any shape and form. And we actually are able to come in and help them manage that and turn that into value that they maybe didn't once have before. And for us, what we found to be really exciting in sort of this equation is there was already a ton of market demand from consumers to have really affordable, perfectly good food. Like that always exists. And especially in a time in this sort of inflationary environment that we're in, that demand is even higher. So we knew the demand was there on the shopper side. And you had brought up, you know, this issue of distribution centers or farms. What's always blocked food waste comes down to fundamentally distribution. It's the sort of challenge across the industry. Like for, if you're looking at it for folks that are, you know, operating in sort of the food bank capacity, like it's like time is not on your side, right? As something gets closer to expiration, that transport, that storage becomes even more difficult, right? You don't have the ability to have a truck out every day, every hour, moving through all of that food. And it's the same for, you know, other businesses that are looking online sell it, right? Like there isn't a solution from a distribution standpoint that is going to get things to and from to customers. And also, if you're on the other side of it, like opening up more grocery stores that are just sort of like food waste specific, like doesn't necessarily make sense, because then you're in the logistics business of a grocery store that's effectively built on like obscure ephemerality, which is just not an awesome business model. So for us, we look at it as the marketplace solution being the best solution, because it actually allows us to use the infrastructure within a retailer And we know they've got the demand to figure out how to solve this, to connect to the consumer. And that allows the consumer to go right in the store and pick up, for example, some chicken you may now have available for 50% off. It's got a day to eat, but like, that's awesome. You can build the rest of your cart around it with regular items in the grocery store, like potatoes or asparagus, what have you, that might not be in the flash food fridge at the time. So we approached it from a marketplace standpoint to create more ease in that sort of challenge of distribution and ephemerality that exists within like food getting super close to its Best Buy.
Yeah, and the fact that you have customers also being comfortable and knowing the grocery stores too, and that kind of traffic to be able to see this. Because I guess one of my questions is, why weren't the grocery stores doing it themselves? Or were they doing it by the little stickers and saying like $2 off?
You know, they have been doing it. So that's the sticker programs that you see are usually that tool that a retailer has to move it. The tricky thing with a sticker program is it requires, one, the assumption that you're going to be in the store that day, right? And you're going to wander around the store and you're going to hunt for that sort of visual component. That's not necessarily the fastest way to move that. And so again, we go back to this sort of like logistics issue with time. The beautiful thing about a marketplace is when a grocer lists their food that's available on our platform is then able to alert shoppers of new postings, new deals, new opportunities. So it actually triggers that moment where they are incentivized to come in store with, you know, food that was effectively on its way out. And like I said, within our fridges, you can to some extent create a total meal. There's a little bit of creativity in it. But what we often see is folks will come in, they'll grab their produce box, they'll grab their meat or dairy, and then they sort of finish their shop. But what we actually took was the food that was sort of like on the afterthought became the forward thought for these businesses to mobilize traffic in a new way and still give, you know, their shoppers a great deal. It also feels really nice to be able to get this food just from like a, call it, sustainability standpoint. So there was just this really great halo, and the brands that we've worked with on the retail side have really loved that as the sort of core benefit of what we offer. It's not about, we affect effectively what they've shrinked out. So they look at us as like probably one of their best and most efficient marketing tools they've got, right? Like there is an amazing way to mobilize foot traffic, which I think has been really cool to see retailers sort of evolve with this mindset about this particular type of food in their store.
Yeah, and the fact that the food is good food is just, it's coming to the end of its life. And I think everybody in that scenario is always happy for somebody to eat it and use it. And being able to sell that in the traditional logistical sense that is a grocery store makes a ton of sense.
We call it the Goldilocks window. And the way that I see it is like, it's perfectly good food, ready to eat at the right price. Like there's nothing more exciting about that in terms of like consumer shopping. And I, you know, what I kind of compare it to, it's very akin to what you've seen sort of re-rise with like vintage fashion. You know, it's perfectly good clothes with actually a little bit more, I would say, grit and heart to them at a really good price. Like there's no reason to sort of participate in fast fashion with that volume out there. It's sort of the same mindset that we look to build around this component of food. Like it's perfect food. It's actually, well, much better price than what you would see as sort of at a full price item in the store.
Yeah. And going into this, I was thinking about, you know, you've obviously being in marketing for lots of food brands and, you know, we bringing up Impossible Foods because it was kind of like, it's a new category. I was thinking like, how much of education did you have to put on to the consumers about flash food? Or was that a hard marketing initiative to get those first app downloads, to get the customers to engage with it and the usage of it? Or was it a bit more natural because of the like Goldilocks exchange that does exist there? Like it's pretty easy to understand the value once it's being used.
Yeah. What's really incredible about this platform, the technology in and of itself, is the value proposition is sort of immediately realized. Our tech is super simple. By design, you know, we service a lot of different demographics that have different levels of like tech literacy. You know, a lot of interesting folks that come on our platform are fixed income retired folk. We've got people who are deal hungry. We've got like pioneer mindset, like total like seller haulers. We've got folks who are in the States on SNAP and EBT. We've got sort of a wide gamut there. And I think what our audience base has, they learn pretty quick, like it's a great deal and they don't really question beyond that, right? And more recently, we've sort of pivoted our messaging. Historically, the business was very sort of hung on how do we, you know, make this about climate, make this about sustainability. And that I know, you know, I've looked at that data for years. I was probably one of the first people to really look at that data in terms of like how people shop when we brought Impossible to the market. And it's such a, it feels really nice to say like we're going to make these decisions because of climate or sustainability, but they aren't necessarily enduring and they're actually not as fast or as wide with different demographics to come in the door. So when we say deal, they're in the store, they immediately get the food and then they realize it.
It's a quick exchange. And I think that's where, you know, you talk about the data and looking at it being climate focused versus this is just good food that we're able to sell at a good price, which also happens to, as a business, as Flash Foods, we can have an impact both for the retailer and for us as a business to be able to be reducing food waste. And but as a consumer, it doesn't need to have to be, you know, I'm sure they're happy that they're able to save this food. Otherwise, it is going to go to waste. But if you can get them to the table, which is literal in this sense, you know, they're happy to do that. How has the consumers, or I guess, you know, the grocery stores, has that changed at all through the kind of the 7 years in terms of the things that, you know, you've seen in terms of behaviors either on both sides or things that, you know, grocery stores are saying, you know, that we expected this, but we got that. Like, has anything changed in the model or the kind of the consumer side along the way?
So our model has remained the same. I think in this period of time, the industry has gone through a tremendous amount of change. You know, there was a pandemic, which effectively made grocers sort of the number one entertainment that you had in your life, depending on where you were. There was, you know, a time when those businesses just had a ton of cash. It was quickly followed by, and at least within the States, and I think also know within Canada, you know, rising costs became a reality. So the businesses on there and their macro sort of focus has just shifted so radically back and forth, which changes how they'll look at sort of what's most important in your business. Is it, you know, foot traffic? Is it top line? Is it, you know, you've seen a lot of sort of press on things around ESG initiatives. Is that a focus anymore? And so I think I would say our retail customer has been weighing a lot of different macro realities of their business, which we then kind of sit in. If you think about the supply chain of it, we sit on the very sort of far end where we're taking what's effectively about to be thrown out and then bringing that back into value. Like we feel those sort of swings, if you will. And I think what we've always found to be consistent as we've sort of remained consistent in our offering is that we know that our business drives traffic. We know that our business also allows the retailer to offset their quote unquote shrink, which is amazing. And we've just really doubled down on showing the data, you know, from sort of third party proof points of like, this is actually a traffic driver. A shopper who is a Flash Food shopper at your store will come into your store 1.1 more times a month than your regular shopper. And I think what we've been able to show is just the value of that. They've also begun to really see the value of like the community commitment. And as we've rolled out our SNAP and EBT products in the state, we've also been able to connect them to shopper bases that they may have not been able to get access to before. So that's been really huge. But again, it would be like all businesses that are like our clients, our retailers, we're sort of beholden to their big swings as well. And you know, grocery has just been all over it's the top headline in the news everywhere.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season 2 sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are 3 new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. And the business model kind of from inception too, is it based off some sort of kind of rev share with the grocery based on sales? Is it on when the app is used?
Yeah, it's a percentage of share, classic marketplace.
And when it comes to building that marketplace of consumers, as you've grown and expanded, and if you know, you go to Flash Foods and you look at your locations, all of them through North America, it's obviously quite you have a lot of stores that enable Flash Food consumers to use it. How have you built the app side and the customer side? Has it been through kind of in-store marketing? Is it through a kind of a combination of press and digital marketing? And has it been, you know, have you found that to be not easy, but has it worked well to get the consumers to get the app?
Definitely. And this is like a personal style. I, as a marketing leader, have always been historically very focused on how do we drive awareness through press. I think startups don't have the luxury of like global $100 million budget. And, you know, I've been on the planning, the execution side of that. So press has been a huge part of our strategy. It's what drives a tremendous amount of, I would say, volume in awareness and download. And we've had some amazing coverage to date. We typically follow that with, I would say, really targeted digital. So places where we know there's high interest, I would say, on the search side, but then also on the buy side. So in the States, we've got like a group called Nextdoor. Nextdoor is sort of a community-based app. I don't know if it's in Canada as well. We will leverage partnerships like that, just given that our reality as a business is so unique is that we're not national, right? We're not everywhere in every place. We're also not an e-commerce business. So the way you think about your marketing spend becomes much more focused and tactical regionally, which sort of forces this behavior of like, let's use press to drive the broader awareness. We can also use like local broadcast. But then when we target these communities, we get a little bit more focused. So it's like, it's the fun sort of parts of like the OG tactics. Like I've got brand ambassadors, I've got mailers, I've got really calculated buys. And that's how we tend to follow up with like those hot areas. And typically what's cool about our platform is that it has historically been so sticky that I'm able to sort of focus a period of, you know, 3 to 6 months where we build that market out. And then I don't have to return for sort of acquisition marketing because the funnel actually gets so sticky and those folks come back. And then it's just making sure that we have sort of surprise and delight programming in the stores or the continued sort of usage of signage. But I mean, that's been the playbook that we've ran. And it's been fun to be sort of on the side of like having marketing efficiency in that way. I think you need to talk to a lot of like these sort of like D2C companies, and it's just this like burn of cash with sort of like no clear like line of sight to like, when does it stop? And it's been cool to figure out that alchemy here with Flash Food.
Yeah. And I noticed that you had some careers open that were focused on like brand ambassadors in certain areas and cities. So that's kind of that idea where you kind of come in, and obviously there's that chicken and egg scenario where if you're going to partner with a large grocery store or chain in a city and you set everything up, you need to also have that demand from the consumers and enough consumers to be able to make the grocery happy and vice versa. And so it's really neat to be able to see that you can kind of hone in on a small 3 to 6 month timeline, drive a ton of effective marketing, and then go do that to the next market, and that flywheel starts to work on the other side, which, like you said, that's a really, really nice position because that doesn't always happen.
No, it doesn't. And I think what's really, it was a really fun challenge to learn about this business is whole. And you probably know this, Marco, because you probably go to like your grocery stores, right? Like you're not going to go so much further than your neighborhood. Everything is pretty localized. That's why there's always like a few grocery stores servicing you in your neighborhood, unless you're like totally in the sticks. But then you've only got one option, right? And so we'll often forget that like there isn't going to be this like radical shift in your behavior. Like you're going to go to your store. You're also going to go to your gym. That's pretty close to you. You're also going to go to the park where your kids play. Like you've got a sort of radius, and it's been such a different way to think about like, how do I build the base? Because it's just like, again, it's like this almost like it's so OG in its approach, because it's not, it's like, you got to get into like radius field marketing, targeting, like some of those early tactics that we often like don't pull out of our toolbox anymore as marketers, as hardcore in the sort of growth days. So it's like, it's actually been really cool. I'm like, I want to run a whole like masterclass on like the back to basics, like don't pour the money into meta sort of mindset, like actually think about your shopper, your customer's behavior, and like what you like where you have to meet them. That's been a fun one to play around with.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Nextdoor, and I had that experience where I guess they enable somebody that's kind of setting up like a neighborhood area to send out a direct mailer to a radius of neighbors. And so I got a letter saying somebody that is creating your area Nextdoor wants you to join and use this link to sign up. But it was a piece of mail. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. It worked really well because, you know, other than that, I usually just get junk mail. And I guess I didn't classify it as junk mail, which is kind of interesting. So, and I guess the other thing too is you get a lot of foot traffic in grocery stores as well. And so do you have a way to track to understand how many maybe people will go buy a flash food area and like sign up, or like, is there any way for you to like to do that?
Yeah, we used to have like QR codes on the fridge and those things. But I think one, the like that consumer shopper behavior, like, am I going to QR code everything, is still pretty, it's evolved in certain places, like when you have like a Coinbase Super Bowl ad, but it's like, it's not going to drive on just sort of the everyday, because I think the QR code overusage becomes really noisy. So we don't track the traffic. What we do in store typically is like on those sort of launch moments, or if we want to sort of boost re-engagement, we'll actually just use like a brand ambassador demo sort of support in store. We're not like tracking overall traffic. And oftentimes like retailers will have that conversation with you about what it looks like. But yeah, I don't know if that sort of specifically answers your question. We're not, we've just found like it to be like, it's like these nice to haves that don't really drive. But what drives is like a demo coordinator in store. Well, like that physical presence, that dialogue tends to work a little bit better than just sort of the like passerby signage, if you will.
You had to build a marketplace, which has, you know, your consumers and your retailers, and you need to make sure that the volume on both sides kind of work. When it comes to food waste, and obviously that's a big climate initiative, how important was that storytelling to the consumers? Or do you think that it really was, you know, about the solution that Flash Foods provides, as in, you know, these are deals, this also does food waste, and this also drives traffic for a grocery? Like, how important on that marketing mix did you need to talk about the climate side of things?
So I think if we're just looking at a marketplace, there's a framing that Bill Gurley had many moons ago in looking at marketplaces, which is marketplaces only work if you're solving for, I would say, highly expensive or valuable complexity on one end, which would be that of the retailer. And we talked a bit about this issue with like 40% of what's in a store going out, but you've got a logistics issue to get that to consumers. And you've got an optics issue where like people don't know where a yellow sticker is in the store when they're just spending their sort of daily life at their job. So that existed. On the shopper side, you need to know that there's some form of demand. And what I know is that there is not demand to pay the green tax, if you will, to come in for climate. There is a demand to pay for things that are cheaper than a commodity good, and that will always exist. And so what's amazing about how we framed it was not only the value of sort of alleviating complexity to these businesses, to being able to not just make money, but make their balance sheets much healthier. And on the shopper side, we were able to say, this is the only product that will beat a commodity good. And you save thousands of dollars a year. That's an opportunity to fix your roof, to fix your car, to buy your kids' school supplies. Outcome is we're all making the world a better place, but really the real outcome is you're living a more fulfilled life, or you have a much more fulfilled business.
When we think about just the impact from your customers, which are the retailers, what do you hear from them, and how important is this to them in terms of their kind of strategy over the next few years? Because obviously, you know, between food costs and food waste and the challenges there, like, how important are you now as a partner for these retailers?
The partners we've had over the years have just, we've grown together in door, together in sort of relationship. And I think where we've sort of fit in their ecosystem that has been really important to them, like I said, initially, like, and I'm sure you know this, Marco, you know, retail businesses are extreme. They're like razor thin on the margin. There's a lot of throughput, but like those stores are constantly at work to be optimized, to work on the balance sheet side of things. And we definitely provided that value with the offset on the shrink. Like I said, where we became a much more interesting tool for them is, again, effectively, not only a low cost way, but there's some monetary value coming back to them in terms of traffic. And there are, like I said, there are a few things that if you're the, you know, the marketing exec team, or the even just a leadership team, that you can invest in that are going to drive traffic and add value to your bottom line. And that's been the feedback that we've seen. You know, we create this stickiness of community that ends up coming back more frequently because they have to pick this food up, right? It's ephemeral. Like if you buy something, you got to go in there and get it because it's gone. If you don't, like quite literally gone. So that was the sort of like the happy value that we've brought to these businesses. And that's been something that we've really been able to now showcase as we continue to grow, which has been really exciting.
Yeah, if I think about myself and like why I go to a grocery store, it's often because, you know, we need to get food to eat for the week, or we forgot something, or there's an occasion and we need to pick up something. But other than that, I don't see often grocery stores now being able to drive me in. You know, I remember I used to work at a grocery store when I was 14 years old. And so I remember the flyers that would drive people in. So to have that tool to be able to effectively drive people into the store for a retailer is really important. Plus they get to sell food that's going to waste. Plus people get a deal. It's obviously really, really, really compelling. And so obviously you're trying to scale throughout more North American locations. But what do you think the next kind of 3 to 5 years look like in terms of next steps or big kind of goals or ambitions?
Well, so I think on the technology side, there's a lot of amazing work that we're doing around, you know, making our tech actually a little bit, I would say, more responsive, more interesting for both our retailers as well as our consumers. So however we sort of manifest the way that you tag, operate, plan, those are some big, I would say, big innovations on the tech side. How we think about integrating AI, you know, I think something that we talk a lot about as a team is our experience is like one item that you buy, a few items that you buy, and then you have to build a full shop around it. So there's a lot of interesting ways to help consumers or help retailers sort of go further into the grocery store beyond the flash food zone that we're looking to build in. And that's just huge from a value proposition standpoint because it helps increase cart size, it helps add simplicity for the shopper. So those are tech pieces that we're working on. From a scale standpoint, you know, I think we're very focused on 3 to 5 years would be starting that path further globally. You know, for us, our goal is to solve this for every retailer across the world. That's the ambition. And I think, you know, if we do this super, super well, we get the globe to food waste zero and food equity is happening all over the place. And, you know, hopefully if we do that, our job here is done. But that would be the sort of shape of where we're heading on the scale. And then there's some exciting work happening on the tech front.
Jordan, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people learn more about Flash Food or yourself and get more information?
You can learn more about Flash Food at www.flashfood.com, or you can find us in all of the app stores, Apple and Google. We're there. Learn a bit more about us. And then my name is Jordan Shank, and you can look me up on LinkedIn or on the internet and definitely find more information about me.
Thanks so much again, Jordan.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into the episode of Someone Like You. We hope you found our discussions today really insightful. Next week, we'll dive into another entrepreneur founder building a business in climate, so stay tuned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It really, really helps us out. Follow us on LinkedIn, where we also post really great videos from this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.